Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross from KGUA FM, Walla, California. When I'm in Portland, which is often, I listen to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 on your FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and helping navigate the systems and services that the Joint Office of Homeless Services and its partners either have in place or are developing to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing. Today, we'll hear the story of Terry and Tiffany, a couple that lost their housing right at the beginning of the pandemic and were faced with a medical emergency soon after that when Tiffany contracted bacterial meningitis. She lost her ability to hear and to walk more than a few steps without assistance. Terry became her full-time caregiver while the couple lived in their van on the streets of Portland. Here's Terry describing what happened to him and his partner Tiffany and how they found help.
Terry Polston, born and raised in Portland, Oregon my whole life. Pretty much worked my whole life up until right before COVID hit. I don't know, before that, I was working full-time, making $24 an hour at Steeler Construction, and it was awesome. We had an apartment, everything. And my girl, she got sick, and the place we were staying at, they sold the house. She got a hospital, we went back, and then read who we were staying with, said we sold the house, and we're like, and it was her best friend that they went to kindergarten together. So it's like, so now we're out. Mm. Yeah, 3 days. They sold the house. And so we were in the van. And that wasn't working out too well because of her situation, and we just made the best we could out of it, and thank God for resources, you know, because, you know, pretty much Pat fed us every day for lunch. That's where we would go. We lost our storage with 90% of our stuff in it. And her mom passed away. We got the whole house. We had a 10 by 20 and a 10 by 15 full of nice, nice stuff. And it was too much. We were paying like close to $400 a month, I believe, at that time. Yeah, out in Beaverton. And we ended up losing it. But we got a check. It was weird. We got a check from Public Storage for $2,700. Out of the blue, we're like, what? What they sell it for and what you owe, you get the difference. So they sold it for a pretty penny. I know that. So we got a check for $2,700. Yeah, because it was all her mom's stuff. Her and mom were so codependent. But yeah, I saw my parents, thank God. My aunt helped to a certain point, but when it came to a big amount or something like that, why would we help you pay your storage unit when, how are you going to pay it next month? How are you going to pay it the month after that? You know? They have the money. I don't know if it's tough love or what, but I know one thing, if I had money, I would and buy a big property, have storage units on it, and call it something like, no one would ever lose their storage units, period. You know, pay me what you can. Right. Thank God we just bought a van with the money that we had saved up. We bought a van, we went into our van, and we were there for two and a half, three years. Finding a place to park at night and being safe is so hard, because the drugs and the crazy people, I mean, it's scary. It really is. I mean, there's a place in Beaverton, though, that has a big, huge parking lot. You got to sign up with them. I forget the name of it, but you sign up with them, and it's a place for you to park. But you just got to go through, jump through your hoops. You can't, you know, you got to obey about all their rules. People don't like doing that, of course. So.
And did you park there?
No. We end up Safeway on 39th and Powell underneath there in the parking garage for a while. Behind Safeway on Hawthorne for a good year. And then just all over. But cops would harass you. You know, you can't be parking here. You got to move. It's like, you know, it was terrible. One day to the next, I didn't know where we were going, what are we doing, and she would go, where are we going? And I would go to the same place. She didn't like it there. So I'm like, okay, it's the only place I think it's safe. She doesn't, so we'd always bicker back and forth about where we're going to go and park. So it's like sleep during the day and stay up all night protecting our car with us in it. It was scary. She had bacterial meningitis, COVID, and then she had COVID again after she got out. I tested negative four times, and I never got the shots. I'm deathly afraid of needles. I can't stand them. I'll pass out when I hear a car coming down the hall, take my blood or something for whatever. I can work myself up too cheesy, and I'm about passing out. But I would be real good with the COVID part of it, but she still had her issues. So it was hard trying to find a place for her to go potty. You know, that's another thing too, because you got to pick up all your stuff, pack up all your stuff out. Behind, you know, if you're out, like our van, we had the door open, we had our little stove out and stuff like that. If we were going to be there for a while, it was terrible, because trying to get her to get to up into Safeway with the walker going up to go potty, you know. Yeah, we've been together for 19 years. Yes, it was tough, real tough. We went to the couple shelter on 60th and Foster. My ex-wife, she went to Bible study with one of the gals that worked for TPI. T TPI is one who helped us out get into the shelter on 60th and Foster. It was couples, and that was, it's hard to find places to take couples. It really is. Even to move into a rent a room, no couples, because fighting, arguing all the time. And so anyway, we were there for 3 months. We went from the couple shelter there on 60th and Foster to the Banfin Hotel on 37th, and right by, off the freeway. That was the hotel. We were there for 3 months, and then we got hooked up with Home Forward, and now we're here. Yeah, it's a godsend. It really is. Yeah, it's just because my ex-wife, she says, "You guys, you can't be doing this, you know." And my ex-wife called her friend that they went to Bible study together, TPI. She called me and left the message, and I got back to her, and she set up an intake. We went in there, signed up. We were in there that night, actually. Actually, we had to go get some stuff from storage, so we said, "How about tomorrow morning?" And we were in, and we had it was bunks, you know, a couple of bunks all through. Then they had women's domestic, just women only on one side, couples, and then big, huge area for all resources. They got my glasses for me. They got Tiffany's glasses for her. And it's just the resources are there. People just don't use them. Once you're into the couple shelter, that's the next step. And it's all in one. It's just you stay there, and then they're at the hotel, and then they find you housing once you're at the hotel, and then they start. Central City Concern. Okay. That was it. They set us up for, you get a phone and doctor's appointments, all sorts of stuff. It was nice. It's out there. You just gotta apply. You gotta jump through the little hoops, and you gotta follow through, and you've got to, people that are on drugs on the street, they can't follow their procedures, because, you know, staying at the couple shelter, there could be random UAs, and people that were on drugs, they'd leave, and they just left on their own, and they screwed that up. And so I've known a few people that's died, some friends of ours, from fentanyl over the years. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's one thing I never did do. Yeah, it's just, it's sad. It's still a big issue out there, I think. We've been here now housed for a year. We're going on a year. We got to redo our yearly lease coming up. So, yeah, thank God for programs, because since we're disability, we pay 28.5% of income, because these are $1,700 a month for just a one bedroom. I don't see how people make it. I really don't. I mean, you got to have two jobs, both of you working or whatever. But the housing part of it, there's help out there. And now I just started going back to work. Since we moved in here, it's been about, I think I've been here like 8 months or so. I started working just part-time in the morning. It's perfect. Ken, my friend, he's manager over there, and he goes, "You want to just come work 3 hours in the morning, 2-3 hours every day, 6 days a week?" I'm like, "Yeah, great. It helps the income." Things are going good now. I mean, other than, she always says, "You have a life outside of mine." I said, "No, I don't. I'm here 24/7, basically. I go to the store and come home, come back right away, and just getting her out with me just to go to the store and back, it'll take us 2 hours just to go to Dollar Tree. And we'll be in there for 2 hours. Imagine that, how stressed somebody can get trying to deal with 2 hours in the dollar store, and it's only this big. Safeway is an hour just to get, you know, a few things, because she has to look at everything, because she doesn't get out. We do a year-to-year contract lease with this place, and then be turning into them. So it's just, you know, we got all be good here too, because they'll, you know, if you got problems, people coming over making noise and stuff like that, getting complaints from neighbors, you know, they don't like that either. So it's hard to just picture me being housed right now. I mean, 2 years ago, I wouldn't think I'd be in housing. I thought she'd be in a nursing home and I'd be on the street. Seriously, I mean, at that time, that's what I was thinking. I was going to try to get paid to the state to take care of her and everything. It's not that easy to get things going and what you have to do. There's classes and this and that, but there's certain classes you have to be certified for and this and that. Pretty much they want you to be a certified nurse to take care of your significant other. I mean, would you rather have a family member take care of you if you're disabled, or somebody on the outside take care of you? Yeah, but then again, it's sort of, it's because she'll go, and of course it, me, okay, fine, we won't do the exercises today, we'll pass on it, you don't have to do this today, you know, it's hard. As an outsider, they're on it, they'll make sure you do it, and it's different because they will, you listen different when it's somebody else versus a loved one.
Does she have a nurse that comes?
She went to the doctor, and we've missed, or had to reschedule twice for someone to come and do an assessment, and I still got to get all her medications listed. It's on her my chart. I just got to make sure they're all the right ones, because she still has stuff on there that's not, that she's not taking still. Like that, they want all that kind of stuff, and you know, I do a bunch of other stuff, and she's not feeling good. She goes, I can't do it today. I'm like, okay, fine. But yeah, they do. We are having, I don't know if it's a nurse come in. I forget what they call it.
Home care nurse?
Home care. In-house home care, something like that. Yeah. Yep. And people that are that, well, they almost lost her because they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. I couldn't take her to the hospital or the ER because she was, I couldn't get her to come out of it. I woke up and I tried to get her to wake up. She wasn't responding. I'm like, what the hell? She's just burning up. I mean, on fire. I mean, I was like this, going, oh my God. So Darcy, her friend, we got a cold wash rag and put it on her face and cool her down a little bit, tried to. And she was just starting to just curl up and just, I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? And she was moving so much like this. I couldn't put her in the van safely enough and drive her to 2 miles down the road to St. V's in Beaverton, because she would have been all over and probably hurt herself. And we waited and waited and waited to try to get her to come out of it. Finally, we just called the ambulance and had to come pick her up. But yeah. I keep telling her, I said, I wish it was me, because if I lost my hearing, I would be no problem. Because I'd say 75% of my family's deaf. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah. My mom's parents were deaf. So my mom would go to work and drop me off at grandma and grandpa's. And if I wanted anything, I had to sign for it. And that's, you know, like this. She says she wants to learn it again. But learning it and reading it is different. And my hands do not feel like they should. Doing like letters and numbers, it's difficult, but she knows sign language to me. She can't read my lips because of this. I said, I'll shave it off. Got the things off of Temu, for little pads. You write on it, you push a button, and it clears it. We have like 3 or 4 of them lying around. Yeah. Or I use my phone and use Notepad, and I just hit it and just talking to it. What I want to know is, if I know there's got to be something out there that she can wear. They have it in the hospitals now, the doctors. If you go to the doctors, it's called WebEx. It's a monitor about this big. They set it down, they have a translator on the other side, and the doctor comes in, we'll start talking, and it'll pick it up, and then they'll tip it, she'll talk to Tiffany through the monitor, and Tiffany would read the monitor and talk back to her. We have a clear captions phone in the bedroom that she could pick up and talk to somebody, and whatever the person's saying on the other end is all texted out on a screen about probably that wide like that. That's free. That we got that through on TV, but you've seen it, so I called. And it's really sad. The friends you thought you had, they're gone. If they can't communicate with you, they don't want to put the effort in of coming over and having to write down on a pad and paper just to say hi. She's, yeah, it's sad. It really is. I mean, I've called a few of her friends. I said, hey, look, can you think you can spare some time to maybe come over and see your friend? You know, she can really use, you know, some friends besides just me. Yeah.
Then they're not real friends.
No.
That's sad.
I know, they're going through their own still. Yeah. It's like she's a burden. You know, that's the way I'm catching vibes off of that. It's like, really? And she just says, yeah.
Well, she's lucky she has you.
That's what everybody says. You are so good to her. Yeah. I mean, I hold off and deck my best friend. Turn around and punch him, laid him right out, because he goes, why are you still with her? She can't, she's, look at her. I said, you've known her longer than I have. And I turned around and he said something, I just turned around and snapped, knocked him right out. Sorry. Yeah, well, it's just how would, he was a friend to her just as long as I've known her. Anybody would, why would he say that, you know? Yeah. It's hard for me to talk and say something to people because it'll go from like here and I'll get escalated for no reason. Because they're no better than we are. It's just, oh, I didn't want to go over that. It put me in a bad mood. It's just sad that people rate you and put you in categories that, dude, a year ago I made $100,000 a year. What'd you do? You know? You're making how much an hour? They've even got all these tiny home lots that are coming up, and a few people that come into work. I work at the car wash on 102nd Gleason, if you know where that's at. People hang out there at night, do things they shouldn't be doing, use their place for a garbage can, and that's what I go in every morning, I clean all it up. But got to know some of the people there, and Laura, who used to work at our car wash, she got fired. She didn't even have a place to go. She didn't go into the tiny houses, homes up on 122nd and Gleason or Halsey or I think it's Burnside. And there's been like 5-6 people now that used to hang out there all the time that are staying in there now. So they're out there. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll get my shirt off my back to help somebody once. And they, if I see him again doing something, I'm like, I'm done. But I tried to help you. I'm not saying I'm a bad person for just giving the, you know, not giving him a second chance, but I've seen it. I've seen it. Yeah. I'm a lover, not a fighter. I will help you out any way I can. But once you lie to me or steal from me, I'm done. Oh. I mean, a friend of ours, he's my manager. I've known him for 45 years. That's who got me the job at the car wash. He ended up needing a place. The place he was staying at, they sold the house where he was living at, and he had to find a place real quick, like, but he had to get his check next 2 weeks, and doesn't, I let him stay here for 2 weeks, and it's just hard to let somebody stay here in your house anymore. I mean, I've known for 45 years, but still. It's like, yeah, I don't know. If I had to do it again, I'd probably say no. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Even though he's my boss.
and Tiffany are now in housing thanks to the help of volunteers and staff with several local organizations funded by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, as well as subsidies provided by the voter-passed Supportive Housing Services measure. This is a measure that was passed by metro area voters in 2020. The 10-year region-wide program goals include connecting 5,000 chronically homeless households with supportive housing, building new outreach teams, stabilizing 10,000 households experiencing or at risk of homelessness into permanent housing, and expanding the network of culturally specific service providers. More information about the Supportive Housing Services measure, including the 2024 annual report, can be found at johs.us/shs.
I had combat PTSD and I had explosive disorder. I got off my meds, and that's the first mistake I ever made in my life, realizing when I think I got it, I really didn't have it. And it almost cost me. I said, first thing I had to do is get my mental health together. And I had an episode on the plane. They put me in an E-bed here. And that started my process.
We start with taking care of people where they're at. And in talking to John, his goals were, you know, I want to find housing. That was something I was able to offer to John, like, hey, it sounds like your goals and like what we might be able to help you with align. So is this something you might be interested in, you know, enrolling in our shelter program?
And from then, my whole drive was like, I don't want to let him down because he took a chance on me.
Moving on up.
John is just extremely authentic. He's kind, he's caring. He was a powerful advocate, and I really see that as we came alongside him to help him meet his goals. We're honored to be a part of it.
Thank you guys from the bottom of my heart, because you save our lives. You guys don't understand when I say you guys save our lives, because there's times that we want to give up. There's times that we deal with everything and we're surviving. And I'm just grateful to have this village.
Oh, I did it, man. I got my own place.
So you can't ask for nothing better. It's like a Zen place for you.
I don't care what state you're in. You can be in the worst of the mental health.
And in 60 days, this is what you accomplish.
If you follow the plan and allow this staff to help you with the resources that they have, change your life. And I'm a testament of it.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland. This podcast is produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the city of Portland, Metro, and the state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching for Out of the Streets of Portland. And you can find this podcast along with a ton of information, data, and reports at our website, johs.us. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland. Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Tucked away in the Santa Rita Mountains of southern Arizona, Madera Canyon is a nature lover's dream. More than 250 bird species are found in this region throughout the year. For many birders who flock to the canyon each spring, the elegant trogon is the star of the show. A little bigger than a robin, elegant trogons forage for fruits and insects in the high canopy of oaks, sycamores, and other vegetation along the canyon's many creekside trails. Males have a ruby-red belly, white collar, and gleaming green feathers on their head and back. Females are more dusky gray, with patches of pale red and white. The elegant trogon's lustrous hue is reminiscent of its famously long-tailed relative, the resplendent Quetzal of Central and South America. But despite their bright colors, trogons are elusive birds. So while you're out, it's worth searching for some of their more conspicuous canyon compatriots, too. Listen for the squeaky calls of the sulfur-bellied flycatchers. And keep an eye out for the black and white mohawk of the spunky brindled titmouse. With a little luck and a lot of patience, you may just find yourself sitting below one of these elegant birds singing in a sycamore tree.